So it's been a while, hasn't it? I really apologize for the lag in between episodes. As you can imagine, as I'm sure you're experiencing, as I'm sure we all have been experiencing collectively, 2020 is a crazy year. COVID, social injustice, unrest, murder hornets, plague squirrels. I saw a meme about some crazy fish that has a human mouth. I mean, the government casually releases a statement that there are at least 39 intelligent extraterrestrial civilizations in the Milky Way galaxy alone. And it was picked up by mainstream media outlets. And I think we all have such apocalypse fatigue that that one just came and went too. It's been a lot. Personally, I've been going through a lot the last few weeks in particular. I'll have a solo cast episode coming soon about that, but that's for another time. Today, I'm really excited to finally share this episode with my friend Lauren McAlpin. It comes at a really incredible time, I think, because we discuss self-care and how it's sacred and, you know, the variance of the gender spectrum and different ways to understand the divine feminine and sacred masculine. We speak on tarot and Lauren's new endeavor, Fog and Rain. And it's an honest, beautiful conversation with a person that I find to be completely beautiful and extremely honest and a refreshing voice within this space. So, a little bit about Lauren. Lauren McAlpin, they, them, is a writer, intuitive tarot reader, and Reiki practitioner who is currently working on a master's in psychology at Harvard Extension School. They hold a BA in English from Spelman College and an MA in luxury brand management from Savannah College of Art and Design. After battling kidney infections that developed into sepsis in the summer of 2018, Lauren made a decision to make a career shift from working in marketing and beauty and fashion for the last 9 years to follow their calling, spiritual and criminal justice. This summer, Lauren launched Fog and Rain to educate people about spiritual practice and tools to empower people to be their own healers. Lauren's new business, Fog and Rain, which I highly encourage you to follow on social media, as well as Lauren, lauren.mcalpin. Fog and Rain is spelled as in like reigning in. So it's spelled Fogandreign. Lauren is, again, like I said, just a really incredible person. And I love where our conversation went. If you are looking to just go deeper into your own self-care practices and even just deeper into self and the various ways that you can express yourself, I think this conversation is for you. So in the meantime, sit back, relax, and enjoy our conversation. I'll have new Radio Amenti episodes coming soon to kind of catch you up to speed with where I've been at. But for now, here's Lauren. Welcome to Radio Amenti, embracing the eternal now, where minds and timelines merge, inspiring synchronicity, awakening potential, and making sense of change. Thank you so much for joining me today, Lauren.
Thank you for having me.
I've been really looking forward to this conversation, and I think it really comes at such a potent time. And I'm just so thrilled to introduce our audience to your work. And yeah.
Thank you. I'm honored to have this conversation with you. So let's just dive right into it. I'd love to hear about your journey into wellness and the multidimensional ways that you found it to be healing mind, body, and spirit.
Yeah, of course. So I had a weird entrance into wellness, I guess. I actually used to work in the beauty industry for 5 years and in the fashion industry before that. And in the beauty industry, I was first in hair care, then I was in makeup, and then I moved to skincare. And when I got to skincare, that was kind of wellness adjacent. It was when the whole natural and organic beauty craze was like first starting. And so I just started to learn about wellness from the standpoint of, you know, like what we put on our largest organ. And then after working in beauty for a while, I kind of realized that I'm a disruptor. And so maybe I wasn't really suited for just working in marketing for the rest of my life. And so I then started working with Laura, who is the founder of Soul Addict, this really, really awesome CBD brand based in North Carolina. And working alongside with her and really learning about cannabis in the wellness space was really interesting. I think it kind of took me back to being kind of like a novice in a space, and I really enjoyed it. And I, around the time that I first reached out to Laura, I was still working in New York, and then I became ill. And after I became ill, I really just took such a focus in alternative wellness and not necessarily what we were hearing about like mainstream, but you know, just different alternative wellness practices, esoteric practices, and things of that nature. And I just began this journey, and I started my 365 days of self-care and was just picking up different ways to take care of myself. And I just wanted to share what I learned with other people, which has led me to create Fog and Rain, my new company. And that's kind of how I made it here. I had to do it the rough way of working in an industry that I didn't enjoy and then falling really ill, but I kind of eventually made it here. And I'm just really grateful to now be in a space where I am around so many more like-minded souls.
I find it so interesting that this path of awakening and finding the path, right? It always tends to come from contrast, right? Being put into situations that you're like, all right, well, this isn't it. Or experiencing something that can be so detrimental and then coming out on the other side of it and having wisdom to share. It's truly like the hero's journey, like Joseph Campbell talks about.
Right. Yeah, and I don't think that I was even aware of that journey when I first became ill. I think I just was in such a state of fear and panic, but I came out of it so empowered, and I really had to work on healing myself for a full year before I really got comfortable being able to help others. But I hope that I like inspire others to become healers themselves for themselves, but also for others as well. It's just kind of like a ripple effect of, you know, creating more healing in this world.
Totally. So on that journey, exploring different modalities of healing and getting back to health, what are some of the modalities that really resonated?
So I love sound baths. There was like a time period where I was telling my friends at work, I was going to like a different sound bath, like every 3 days. Because I'm not someone that can meditate in silence. I enjoy vibrations, and I think it's difficult to do that with like regular music, but, really enjoying sound healing has been probably number one, but I really have just like found so many different things and even some things that I haven't picked up in a couple of months. But I think that we're really fortunate that social media is such a great tool now, because there were so many things I'd never even heard of, but then I would find somebody who was really well-versed in it, you know, like when I first heard of like EFT or like tapping, I was like, what is that, you know? But seeing a video of someone doing it, and then, you know, like being able to go to an event with over 150 femmes in a room all tapping together, I mean, it's just really, really powerful. So I'd say sound baths and sound healing was kind of what really, really grabbed me. But I think there's, I just love to stress to people that there's so many things out there. And if meditation or yoga or, you know, breath work or Reiki or some of the things that get like a lot of attention don't necessarily like jive with someone, that like do some digging. There's so much out there that maybe like doesn't get the same shine, but could totally be someone's groove.
Yeah, it's I love that expression. It's so cliche, but it's like healing is not linear, because it's not from point A to point B. It's a fractal journey.
Right. And I mean, as time goes on, I mean, I say this all the time that, you know, the same way that certain medicines or shampoos start to not, you know, they lose their efficacy when you've been using them for a while, the same thing happens with our self-care acts. So like maybe going for a run and like painting really worked for someone like 10 years ago. But if you haven't really evaluated, well, you know, like, is that still working to the same of, you know, like same, you know, ability that it was before? Like, if not, like, well, what else can I stack in my tool belt? And it feels indulgent to feel, you know, like know of 10 things that really bring you comfort. But that's, I think that's just, you know, what society has taught us. And you need to be stacked up, because as we change as individuals, so will our modalities.
Completely. And as the world changes too.
Absolutely. Right.
Yeah. Like before we started recording, just talking about 2020 and everything that has come to the surface this year, and why having tools in the toolkit to surf through this chaotic time is so important for your mental, physical, emotional health.
It really is. And I'm not, I often now have been thinking about if I hadn't started my 365 days of self-care last August, how I would be moving into this time period, because I was, by the time that March came around, really comfortable with doing a self-care act every day. It was something that, you know, took some practice to really get used to doing that. But I'm so grateful that I kind of taught myself that, because, you know, we really did get hit with so many different things this year that are affecting us all in different ways.
Definitely. And I mean, the timing of launching Fog and Rain too, it seems like such a really incredible timing. You know, I'm really looking forward to your class that's coming up.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I was on the fence and kind of was holding off, and even I refrained on posting about my 365 challenge once all of this began, because, you know, a lot of people are not in a position right now where maybe they feel like they can indulge in something comforting every day, and I can understand why that would be. But I wanted to create my first workshop, at least to be able to teach people how to care for themselves, you know, how to pull cards and you know, connect with your spirit guides and your ancestors and do things for yourself. So it kind of just seemed like a good time to start. I struggle with starting. I, as a manifestor human design type, that's kind of like my life lesson, is to just, you know, kick myself in the butt and get out there. But I this is definitely way more about helping people have skills more so than creating a brand for myself, which has been a little intimidating, but it's a really beautiful thing, I think, to just share healing amongst people. And I'm always excited to learn from clients as well. I think it's not, I think if any healer is telling you like, you need me, I'm the healer. They are not the healer. The best healers are the ones that like teach you how to just heal yourself and not be in need of someone else. So that's kind of just the mission of right now, because there are so many opportunities for us to heal ourselves, you know, during this time.
For sure. And I love that you said that, because, you know, back when I kind of got sent on the path in 2013, I remember wanting so desperately to find the person that can give me the answers. Who is that? And then became so reliant on finding the answers from someone else. And even having practiced, you know, oracle cards and divination for a really long time, there's something so incredible and empowering about having that teacher that says, no, my goal is to set you free, not to keep you forever on retainer.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But it is something that I think everybody, when they start their journey, struggles with. That, like, where are those people? Where are these tools that are going to give me all of the answers? And you go through a bunch before you realize, like, wait a minute, I have that within myself. And I wish that I had more people telling me that in the beginning of my journey, that, like, you know, like, stop. Like, I have so many friends that are wonderful, wonderful readers, but eventually it's like, stop going to other people and read for yourself. And I even had an Akashic Records reading where the woman that I was reading with shared, like, you know, your guides are, they're yelling at you. And they say you need to stop going to other people and that you need to start asking these questions for yourself. And it was the first time that I was like, okay, all right, you know, that makes sense. I've booked a lot of readings. Maybe I should really start looking within. But it's a struggle that we all have. And I think it's really great when everybody talks about it, that, like, you're going to have that, but eventually, you know, no one knows you better than you.
Completely. And it's all part of the process, because I don't think you can get from point A to point B without having those lessons of realizing that along the way, you know, like,
right.
I love the Wizard of Oz and how they say the power has been within you all along. So,
yes, right. So true.
And I think that using, you know, the fact that the class that you have coming up, I really love that it's going to be both tarot and oracle, because they're such complementary tools to really finding that sovereignty within yourself and just a deeper connection to intuition, right?
Yes, absolutely. And that was another thing that I think I also wish that I had known earlier on, is, you know, being able to use both together individually. You know, how can I decide when I'm called to one versus the other? But I think it's so beautiful when they are used together and incorporated to, you know, share messages with people. And it goes back again to just how many tools there are in this world that exist for us to be able to find comfort or communicate with our spirit guides. And, you know, I want people to always feel stacked, like they've got some list somewhere, even if it's just in their brain of, you know, I'm feeling a little off today, but I know there's a list of things that I could go to that could, you know, give me a little pep.
Absolutely. Tarot is such an interesting tool as well. I mean, both tarot and oracle, but in particular, I think, you know, understanding that it can be used as this form of divination to kind of take a glimpse into what the future may bring, but also to understand the archetypes of yourself, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I personally, so I picked up tarot cards first, and I wish that I really had picked oracle cards up simultaneously and not just taking like a head first dive into tarot. I think tarot can be a little intimidating, but it also can be very realistic. And I think there's just such a beautiful relationship between the two. I think also it's kind of like having, you know, everyone has a different relationship with their parents, but, you know, like maybe you go to your dad for one thing and you go to your mom for something else, you know? And I think it's kind of a set, like at least for me with my decks, you know, if I'm feeling in a certain kind of way, then I may be more inclined to pick up my tarot deck. If I want, you know, some tough shit, I want some real advice, I want some, you know, real clarity. And if I want a little bit more of like a hug, some optimism, you know, some you know, good feels, then maybe I pick up an oracle deck. But sometimes, and a lot of the times, I'll do a tarot spread and then I'll pull an oracle card at the end for myself and kind of have that be my ending on like a high note. So it's always really interesting for me to hear from other people, you know, like if they're drawn to one over the other and why that is and how do they use them together. And some people who just are so in love with one and won't go anywhere near the other. It's, you know, it's really interesting. But I think at the very least, everybody should just know a little bit about both. You know, options are always, you know, we love an option. So, yeah.
Totally. It doesn't hurt to have as many tools in the toolkit as possible.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, like, I love tarot so much, but time just feels so strange right now. The fact that it's June, I'm like, oh, back in December.
Right.
I kept pulling the Five of Pentacles, and I'm like, oh my fucking God, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, why do you keep coming up? So I'm like, I'm going to put you down, and I'm going to just go to meditation, and that will be what I use. So I really love that, taking this holistic approach to every tool that's within that box, because it's ebb and flow, whatever really feels good to that time in your life. And it's okay to put some things down while you pick something else up, right?
Absolutely. And I think cards are one of those things, at least for my friends that are readers, you know, whether they just read for themselves or for others, I've heard a lot of my friends say at different points that, like, you know, all of a sudden they were real tapped in and their guides were telling them a lot. And eventually they needed to say, like, okay, well, maybe I'll stop receiving messages from you and really just tap into myself. And they'll put the cards away for a little bit and then come back to them later, which is, you know, understandable. It all goes back to, you know, having that tool belt.
Sure. For the class coming up, anybody looking to join, how can they participate?
So they can go to the Fog and Rain Instagram, and the link for the tickets are in the bio. I also have some available seats for people of color and queer people that would like to attend for free. So people can just DM me directly to receive a spot. I just really want as many people as possible to, you know, get involved. I've had a few friends even reach out and say, I really want to take the class, but I'm a little intimidated. But there's absolutely no reason for anyone to be intimidated. I'm not going to put anyone on the spot. This is really more about just giving people some education, and I hope that people feel inspired to get their first deck. I mean, a lot of the times that I've seen workshops, they will say, you know, like, bring your deck to the workshop, whether it's an in-person or virtual. But what if you don't even know where to begin? What if you don't know what deck you want, or, you know, where to find it, or do I want tarot? Do I want oracle? Like, which direction do I go in? And so this is kind of just like, if you're not sure, you know, maybe even after this, it might be a couple months before you buy one. You know, my objective is to get the people that are kind of like on the fence or a little hesitant. So, but yeah, it's just really a basic 101 course. And I'm really excited just to get questions from people and share some knowledge.
Amazing. Do you have any decks in particular that you really enjoy working with?
Well, I mean, of course I love your deck.
Thank you.
Of course. I actually have your deck sitting right here. I was pulling cards this morning. So that's, I will just say, I favor your deck, your oracle deck for sure.
Thank you.
When I'm pulling oracle cards. And when it comes to tarot decks, I love Jericho's deck, Neo Tarot. I love the imagery.
Yes.
Love the guidebook, because there is a self-care act for every card. And since I'm just the self-care king, I just love that. And I even look at the guidebook, you know, sometimes when I'm not even using that deck, just because I'm so drawn to that aspect. The Mystic Mondays tarot deck. I just got that. It's got these beautiful like holographic edges and it's gorgeous. There's a Soul Life Magic deck that comes in white, pink, and black, I believe. It's like the same design, but in different colors. And that deck is absolutely gorgeous. So I have a lot of different favorites. And when I have in-person readings, I actually bring at least 6 decks. And when the person sits down and they start speaking, I pick their deck off of when they speak what it kind of like complicated to explain, but I'll hear their voice and all of a sudden it'll be really clear which one to use. And I know for people it's different. You know, they feel if they're doing readings that they want cards with a lot of images on them so that people can understand and look. And I know personally I have some decks that are a little more aggressive and I don't like using those with new clients because I remember what it was like in my very first reading to get the 8 of Swords and the 9 of Swords in the same reading, and I thought I was convinced I was dying. Just the amount of swords on the deck, you know. And she wasn't that comforting. So I think, you know, it's every deck has its like really beautiful things about them, and they're kind of like movies. They bring different inspiration to me at different time periods, and you know, I think I will just forever buy decks. That one day I'll just have like a bookshelf full of decks. Because I think, at least personally, I think that you can never have too many.
I agree. And I love that you said they're like movies.
Yeah. And it's kind of like, you know, you've got a favorite movie that you used to watch like all the time, and then one day you just think, oh my gosh, I haven't watched that movie in forever. And you watch it again and it brings back all these emotions and feelings. And, you know, again, there's so many visuals with decks usually. So again, it's like a very visual experience as well. So, you know, it's just like having like a library full of movies. That's kind of like the way I like to see it, like to think of it. And then it helps me remember, of course, for people that have never had a reading before, what it feels like to see those cards in, you know, in front of you for the first time. Like, what experience would you want that to be like? And I think the deck can shape that a lot of the time, and that, you know, as readers, we shouldn't only think about how we feel about the imagery, but how you know, our clients will feel about it as well.
Allowing that other dimension to the reading is really important, because I can really relate to, you know, maybe having a reading with cards that felt a little aggressive, and felt like the reader might have been a little cold, and it was just, you know, there's a whole energy bubble attached to that kind of can color how you move forward with it, because then you're like attached to, oh my gosh, am I cursed? Is there something wrong?
Right. Absolutely. I've met plenty of people that have said, I had a reading once. It was so horrible that anytime any person asks me about having a reading, I say no. And it's very similar to like going to see a dentist or going to see a doctor, and you have a really horrible experience, and now you're afraid to go to the dentist or the doctor. And so that also is why I want people to learn how to read for themselves, because, you know, that means that you can kind of create that comfort for yourself, for your friends, your family, because, you know, there's some bedside manner to being an intuitive reader, at least in my opinion. And there's you know, like picking up on things intuitively to make a client feel comfortable while also giving them very clear information. It's this kind of, it's a little balancing act that I think is important to have before you know, like start reading for others.
So with COVID and everything, you know, before this hit, were you doing readings in person? Were you working out of any spaces locally?
So actually, I was doing all of my readings virtually before. I would do some in-person readings if my friends were going to have like a dinner party or whatever, and they would ask me to like come and bring cards and read for people. But I've been doing a lot virtually, which has been really interesting. I think it has been a little I mean, a little validating, because I think that a lot of people may come into a reading, an in-person reading, and, you know, they're watching for, like, is the tarot reader noticing my necklace that has my grandfather's, you know, something that shows he was in the army, and then she makes a comment about the army. You know, like, there's a lot of, like, fraudulent stuff that can happen. And I think in some ways, like, taking out the in-person aspect of it kind of eliminates some of that, and it becomes really more about the messages that are shared. So personally, I've been enjoying doing virtual readings, but in-person readings can be great too. I also think that I can hear people's spirit guides better when they're not in front of me, because they're energy is further away, so I'm not picking up on their energy or their thoughts. It's more about what their spirit guides are saying, so it creates more distance and it's easier for me to share messages. So I've been enjoying virtual, and I think it also, you connect with people from all over the world, which I think is phenomenal, that you can, you know, like, do a healing or a reading for somebody that's, you know, on the other side of the world.
Completely. And that's one of the beautiful things about social media too. You know, social media can be, I always reference this film Arrival, which, have you ever seen it?
No.
Oh, it's so good. It's with Amy Adams, and it's basically like these disc UFOs come down, and they have these beings in it called the heptapods, and their language is nonlinear. So they speak in this kind of like ink blot, almost like the Zen way of speech, where everything is nonlinear and happening all at once, you know? And I think there's this like element to when you are not in person and just able to kind of tap into that all at once-ness. It's really interesting. And the point I was making with it too is that, you know, it talks so much about language, right? Nonlinear language and things like that. And social media is one of those things that I look at, like this nonlinear language, where it can either be like a weapon or a tool. So looking at it as a tool of connection, or a space that can become very harsh and scary. But one of the things about it is that it allows us to connect in such an incredible way. I mean, that's how I found you, or we found each other, rather.
right. Yes. Yeah, I love it. So it's been wonderful. I love the virtual aspect of readings and healings, and again, at least for me personally, it creates more clarity for me to hear the channels that I'm actually trying to tune into. So, but I think both are beautiful.
And speaking of both, I know one of the other subjects we wanted to talk on, and something that I've loved how you articulate through social media and through your work, is just how to balance the masculine and feminine, and, you know, looking at nonlinear things and both hemispheres of mind. I'd love to talk a little bit about that.
Yes, absolutely. So that is so important to me. I think regardless of whether it's the spiritual work I do or the queer activism work that I do, that people need to be really aware of their feminine and masculine traits. And this is not at all going in the physical direction, but more so on a personal level. And I think that when we are constantly working on balancing our divine masculine and our divine feminine, we are able to bring more to this world, more positive, good qualities and things to this world. And it became really important to me to discuss divine feminine and divine masculine energy a couple of years ago when I first came out as non-binary. I always knew that I was non-binary from a very young age, a specific playdate. I just always knew that I was very aware of my masculine energy, and it changed and morphed into a lot of things over, you know, the last 20, 30 years. But it's something that I feel really passionate about talking about. And I think that when people balance their divine feminine and masculine, that not only are they able to be more empathetic to others, but that they're ascending themselves. They're able to be more of a whole, full self when they acknowledge, you know, the masculine and feminine characteristics that are within them. And I think that it's something that queer people are constantly having to evaluate, and maybe not necessarily people who don't identify as queer. But I think it's a lesson that can be learned for everybody and helps us find our highest selves.
Completely. I think there's something about allowing yourself permission to even, you know, entertain that aspect of self. I know for so long I was afraid to talk about being a queer person, that I date men and women, that I am mm-hmm. very much in touch with my masculine side, but also my feminine side, but I never really knew how to properly articulate it or feel safe saying it. So it's, you know, having mm-hmm. resources and finding your work and just feeling safe and like it's okay to talk about these things and that we're not alone.
Yeah, it's so important to have safe spaces. Like as a person of color, as a queer person, like safe spaces have always been very important in my life. I went to two all-girls schools, and then I also went to a historically black college. So I know what it's like to have spaces that are made for you, and the positives of that, the negatives of that, and how to find safe spaces as an adult, I think, is even more difficult. I think while we're in school, there's organizations and trips and things where you can kind of like meet like-minded people. But if your school, your spaces, whatever, aren't really supportive or aware of people like you, then it's difficult. You have to like go out and find it. But that goes back to social media, of just finding others that are so incredibly brave in the face of adversity, that kind of inspires me at least to speak out. And I think also having privilege as a light-skinned black person, having privilege as a cis-passing person, you know, I feel an obligation to speak out for the things that, you know, I acknowledge that I benefit from certain things, but it oppresses others. And I think that having those conversations is just so important. And I think I just don't, it goes back to like being being a disruptor, being a manifester. Like I just am kind of, I reached a point at 29 where I said, this is bullshit. And a lot of people feel this way, whatever this way was, about a lot of variety of things that people may feel, you know, shame around or struggle with vulnerability. And, you know, the more that I started talking about it, the more that people would come forward and say, I feel that way too. And, you know, I'm just grateful that someone did that for me. And, you know, it's a beautiful cycle. I hope that when someone comes into contact with me, that they go off and do that for somebody else. And it just creates like a ripple effect.
So beautiful. I'd love to know, so, you know, when you came into a deeper relationship with understanding that you're non-binary mm-hmm. and choose saying, these are my preferred pronouns, I think that's a conversation that sometimes people that aren't really, say, I don't know if adept is the right word, or new to understanding mm-hmm. the spectrum of gender, you know, how do you have that conversation with somebody that may be a little like confused when it comes to this topic?
You know, it's difficult, because I think there unfortunately is like no one answer. I think that it's been very case by case. I think sometimes it depends on how I'm being met with questions. If someone is coming forward and they seem genuinely interested and come from a place of being aware of their ignorance, etc., then it can be a very simple conversation. I think unfortunately it gets a little tricky when people are really asking questions just for the point of arguing. But I think that just really what has helped me at least is being very upfront and clear about things. So if I introduce myself in a room and I say, my name is Lauren McAlpin, my pronouns are they, them, and I just go on as everyone else does, I've had people come up to me later and say, you know, I don't, can you explain to me what that means. Or I've had people come up and say, you know, I've gone to introduce my children to someone and I don't know what their pronouns are. How do I ask for, you know, like their pronouns? And these are fairly simple questions. And I have a highlight on my Instagram called Gender that I think just like gives such clear, you know, answers to these things. And if anyone's interested, it's, I think, like just a really good resource. But, you know, it's just getting used to feeling empowered and saying, I'm a non-binary person and I don't relate to having, you know, such and such pronouns. And I think, again, everybody's answer is going to be different. When people have asked me about, you know, being non-binary, I'm always hesitant to give answers just because I want to be clear that my experience as a non-binary person may be different than someone else's experience. So you can't give a blanket like, oh, well, Lauren says that they feel this way about being non-binary, which means that non-binary people feel that way, which is not correct. So for the people that are struggling with, you know, giving those answers, I think it's just being really empowered and saying how you feel. And if you don't feel like answering questions, you know, say there's a lot of resources that you can research to educate yourselves. I know there's been a lot of conversations lately about Black people not wanting to educate others on the injustices that Black people feel. I think it's the same way for queer people. If you feel tired and, you know, gassed out on giving explanations, then you don't have to. You can if you want to, you don't have to. And I think learning that from other people that feel that way has been what has been most helpful for me, to constantly follow people on social media or be friends with people that are met with questions and violence daily, and looking at how they're able to react to it, and know that everyone's going to have tough days with dealing with it, but that there's power in just being true to who you are and not letting anyone make you feel uncomfortable for it.
Completely. That's such a beautiful example to live by in the world, you know? I think, you know, I'm so glad that you mentioned about what's going on now, because, you know, the past few weeks with everything going on, I've really tried to listen on social media and educate myself and bear witness to some of the, I don't know if reactions are the right words, or commentary that's been happening. And so many people want to say, well, teach me how I can do this, or how can I be an ally? Mm-hmm. And it's like, you ask the right questions, phrase the right questions the right way, but putting that all on the other person is an act of violence, because it's just, you know, it's already traumatic enough having that experience, but then putting so much pressure when, thank God, the internet is such a resource, and God, the, like, you know, you can buy books on all sorts of topics. There's just so much to be learned.
There are people out there that are putting in the work to create these resources. So to like find a Black person or find a queer person or find any oppressed person to get them to give you those resources is just lazy and harmful and so many other negative adjectives that, you know, you can just do it on your own and not harm others in the process.
Okay. Circling back to, you know, I think it's so interesting having this conversation about kind of like transcending healing and like the nonlinear way that we can heal. And then looking at like gender as this beautiful spectrum that we can operate through, and how just finding balance in all of it, it really just helps you become a better human, an actualized human in the world. I've been spending some time kind of revisiting some Gnostic texts, and I've been listening to the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, and it's super interesting because in these esoteric texts, they even talk about, like in the Gospel of Thomas, they say, make the two become one so that the male is no longer male and the female is no longer female, and there you'll enter the kingdom. So
first glance, it can sound like this is very religious sounding text, but then when you think about, you know, balancing those aspects of self, what does that do? It helps you become a more empowered human being, because we all have those attributes of self, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. I'm really, really stressed with people that, like, regardless of what gender you are, regardless of what sexuality you are, that really leaning into the full spectrum of who you are makes you a whole person. And, you know, you don't have to feel limited by, you know, what society determines as masculine or feminine, and that we all live on this really broad spectrum. And I think we're finally getting to a point where some of us are allowing queer people to be everywhere on that spectrum, but for whatever reason, it's not this understanding that, well, every person can exist on the spectrum of gender and sexuality, regardless of what their gender and sexuality are. That's the whole point, and that we can explore ourselves. I think it's, you know, this is so corny, but it's like the Katy Perry lyric where she says, like, when did we, like, put all of our dreams on a shelf, or, like, whatever she said, like, when did we stop believing in magic? And it's like, we grew up and we stopped, like, exploring ourselves, because as kids we were always exploring. We were learning what we liked, what we didn't like, what we thought was cool, what wasn't cool. We were always in that state of judgment and for ourselves. And, you know, we can continue that now.
Completely. I love that. Because I actually, it's funny, I saw this meme today about how every person that watched Matilda as a kid and practiced telekinesis,
yep.
Right?
Yep. They're pulling tarot cards now. Totally. Yep. It's so true. Yeah. I mean, I think that if a lot of us looked back at what brought us joy, what, you know, gave us the sense of curiosity as children, that we'd learn to be happier. At least, like, I will say that in coming out and leaning into my gifts, that I probably have felt more fear in a long time, but that I've also felt more happiness in a long time as well. And so it almost makes it worth it of the, like, well, you know, what are people are going to say? How are people are going to perceive me? It's like, well, it doesn't really matter, because I am so happy. I'm so comfortable living as my true self. And it gives you this clarity that sometimes when people are really frustrated, really angry, kind of like in this stuck, you know, behavior, that, you know, maybe it's because they're not really able to lean into that side of themselves. And then you're able to, like, have more compassion for others also.
Completely. And that's that childlike wisdom, you know,
right?
Non-judgment, that just endless curiosity of the world, that just feeling this space of equal fascination with the world and terror, because it's, like, also new.
Right. Yep. Yes, exactly. That fool's journey. It's starting very new. It's like excitement and fear, and what do I want to get into? But I think that keeping some of that wonder is so beautiful.
And there's also something beautiful in language. Is so important how we phrase things, right? It's words cast spells on our reality. So when you step further into your truth, there may be a feeling mm-hmm. of loss, because maybe those who were on your path with where you were at before can't meet you where you are now. But it's not necessarily a loss. It's creating spaciousness for new, right? Because the more you step into who you really are, the more you magnetize those who are also on that journey, who are also on that path, that can also speak that same language with you.
Yeah, it's definitely, I think that every person that has had, like, a spiritual awakening can attest to their tower moment where, you know, they lost a lot of friends. Maybe they lost, like, a job that they were, like, on the fence about anyway, but, you know, or a relationship went to shit. You know, you are doing what's best for yourself. And sometimes people, like you said, people can't come along for the ride. So it can be scary to get through that. But then on the other side, you've made room for, you know, the right people, the right energy, the right opportunities. You know, you just have cleared up all that space.
Completely. It's interesting too, part of the, I think, path that I've found interesting is, you know, when you kind of go through those moments of creating new space and then maybe just kind of letting go of what was, what would be beyond the tower to kind of explain that, like, there I feel like there comes a point where things come back. Like, I remember my coming out of the spiritual closet moment, and I was like, you're fucking crazy. Like, what are you even talking about?
Of course. I mean, right after the tower comes the star. And personally, I say that, like, you know, like, once everything is, like, crumbled and then, you know, like, the dust is settling, that you look up, you look for your North Star, you look for what gives you hope and wonder, and, you know, like, you'll always find your way home with that star, that, you know, you can still be hopeful, you know, like, you have to find that, like, that moment of hope after everything falls, to kind of keep you going and ultimately make it, you know, to the world. You know, that's the journey that we're on. And it's obviously very hard when we have that tower moment and things kind of fall apart. But we're always able to find hope and bring that and give that to ourselves, and not be in a need to, like, go outside of ourselves to find it.
So beautiful and so meta, you know, yeah. Thinking about where we're at in the world.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But things sometimes need to crumble so that that star can emerge, so that a beautiful new world can come from it. And I mean, it's that hermetic axiom, like, as the universe, so the soul, as within, mm-hmm. so without.
Right, right.
As we heal, we create the ripple, right?
Yes, exactly.
So for everybody tuning in, where can everybody keep in touch? And also, what's yes. on the horizon?
So I'm actually also in school right now. I'm getting a master's in psychology with a focus in forensics. So while I've been starting my business, I've also, you know, been studying, and I think it's been really interesting also to learn about the dark side of magic and how it exists in the physical world here. I'm trying to figure out where my career is going to take me, where I can really incorporate both in a big way. And so that's kind of like my ultimate, you know, dream in the future. I really enjoy forensic psychology, forensic science, and also, of course, like, intuitive readings. And I'm hoping one day I'll be able to use both in some capacity. I'm not sure how that looks, but that's the ultimate goal. And I start school again in September, and I'm hoping that I can do a little more to educate people about, and I know this sounds counterintuitive because it's like, what, you're like going against your people, but I want to educate people more on some of the fraudulent behavior that happens around esoteric practices and wellness practices, because people that are looking for healing are a vulnerable group, whether they're looking for physical healing or emotional, spiritual healing, etc. And the more that I've just learned about, you know, psychics that have swindled someone out of $670,000, and, you know, just these incredible stories about people that really were just looking for help, I'm trying to figure out what I can do to really just raise some awareness about that, because, you know, as people are on social media looking for healers and looking for inspiration and guidance, I just want them to also be able to have information on how to vet people. I wrote a really long paper about a spiritual guru who is 35 and got a very large YouTube following. And I personally have some, you know, opinions about the ways in which she is luring people in. And so that's my mission, is somewhere in there, is to really just give people a lot of information on kind of like the dark side of what goes on in the digital healing space, just so that people have information. So that's kind of what's on the docket for me. I also have a really exciting project. I'm hoping to bring a physical tool to fog and rain for people to be able to help themselves and you know, do self-care. So that's kind of what I'm up to right now. If people want to follow me, my Instagram handle is lauren.mcalpin, and the fog and rain Instagram handle is fog and rain, and I can be found there as well.
Amazing. And of course, we'll have all the links in the show notes. And I just have to say, I am so grateful that you will be, you know, I don't think it's necessarily going against the space to be going into the consciousness of exposing what goes on in this
thank you
world. Mm-hmm. It's felt so necessary because I have an idea of who you're speaking of, and I agree. Mm-hmm. I feel like gaslighting and spiritual bypass go hand in hand, and it is
yep.
predatory and really yes, it cruel. Is. So
yes, it is. Yeah. So it's just as important to put information out in the world for people to protect themselves as it is to put out information on how to heal themselves. So I think that's why I'm kind of figuring out where my whole like criminal interest and my spiritual interests go hand in hand, because I want people to heal themselves, but I also want people to protect themselves. So that's the plan.
Completely. Oh, Lauren, you're such an amazing human, and I'm so glad that we're connected.
Oh, thank you. Yes, me too. You're my soul family on the other side of the country for sure.
Oh, can't wait until we can actually connect.
I know. I know. Right.
So, I mean, definitely I'd love to have you on again, especially when you're ready to launch this next project, however it may come to be.
Yes.
Yeah, just thank you endlessly.
Thank you. I really appreciate this. This has been wonderful. And I think, again, like just because of all that's going on in the world, I think it's so important for us to have conversations about taking care of ourselves and protecting ourselves, because they're both equally important and not given enough attention. Society is all about producing work and not enough about taking care of ourselves and, you know, taking care of ourselves proactively. You know, reactively, how to do that, you know, there's not enough of that. So I thank you for just giving me the chance to chat about it.
Thank you.